Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, that's L-E-D-E, a podcast that breaks down state political news and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson. Our big thing this week will be something affecting y'all for a while. That is Statehouse activity surrounding the $9 billion VC summer nuclear boondoggle. Also, we're going to preview the governor's first State of the State address with old standby Andy Shane from the Post and Courier. Interested yet? I hope so. It is, after all, why we named this podcast the South Carolina Lead, L-E-D-E, which harkens back to the old-school spelling for the introductory section of a news story, intended to entice the reader to read the full article. Now, we hope you listen to our entire podcast instead of texting and driving, or while you're stuck behind a horse-drawn carriage in Charleston. But first, quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present. But here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. First up, U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham didn't directly confirm President Donald Trump's use of a derogatory term describing third world countries, but did say Friday that he had made his feelings known to the president about something negative he said. Quote, following comments by the president, I said my piece directly to him yesterday. The president and all those attending the meeting know what I said and how I feel, he added. I've always believed that America is an idea not defined by its people, but by its ideals. Next up, the Greenville News reports that Governor Henry McMaster's proposed tax cut of 1% for each income bracket would have had a better chance of succeeding last year. That's according to Senate Majority Leader Shane Massey. That's because lawmakers were trying to tie tax cuts to offset the gas tax increases under the road funding bill that passed last year. From roads to courts, court hearings across the state are being delayed, sometimes at the last minute, because South Carolina can't hire enough court reporters. Now, court reporters start out being able to type 225 words a minute. That's three times speedier as those show-off fancy fast typists, and five times the average speed of you and me. Now, there are 36 vacancies out of 130 state court-reported positions. That's more than the typical 20 to 25 vacancies due to an increase in retirements this past year. And finally, a joint study conducted by the researchers at the Citadel, the University of South Carolina, the American Heart Association, and the U.S. Army Public Health Center found that Army recruits from a large swath of states in the South are less physically fit and more prone to injury during basic training than recruits from other parts of the country. Obviously, we need to tighten up too, because yet again, we buried the lead. The legislative session is now off and running, and this week will be no different. We're looking at several major news items this week, including the expected House floor debate on several nuclear reform bills, hearings on Tuesday and Wednesday on the proposed $14.6 billion merger that will feature CEOs from Dominion Energy and SCANA, and Governor Henry McMaster's first State of the State address on Wednesday. A really busy week. We're following these events for you here at the South Carolina Lead, as well as other journalists at the State House. And to discuss this important week, we have the Post and Courier's Columbia Bureau Chief, Andy Shane. Andy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
The main topic we're going to be really watching this week is, again, dealing with the $9 billion VC summer nuclear power plant expansion failure. The State House is brimming with lobbyists for these utility companies paying close attention to the deals. Any movements surrounding SCANA, Santee Cooper, Dominion, companies are pulling customers. There's a major ad campaign. There's talk of potential bankruptcy if this deal doesn't go through. Where are we, Andy? What are we going to see this week with these CEOs talking to these lawmakers? Are these lawmakers on board with it, with this deal, or what are we doing?
Well, you know, it's going to be an interesting week, to say the least. The CEO of Dominion, the company that has made the $14.6 billion offer to buy SCANA, will be testifying before two committees, one in the Senate on Tuesday and one in the House on Wednesday. It's his chance to explain why he thinks that there's a great benefit in this sale, especially because the sale does not include giving all the money back. It doesn't include stopping the payments for the abandoned nuclear reactors. And that's an unpopular view on the State House. But at the same time, Dominion says it is offering essentially the best offer that is to be had out there, that is continues to have a financially viable SCANA, and of course makes sense for anyone who wants to buy the utility. So again, he's trying to make his point so that, of course, lawmakers don't pull what's known as the Baseload Review Act, the law that allows SCNG to charge customers for the reactors. And so this is essentially his push to do that. But in the meantime, we also have in the background also maybe some efforts to continue to push Santee Cooper. That has really come to the forefront. And then on Friday, we're supposed to get a report from the Office of Regulatory Staff, and they're supposed to sit here and say whether or not if they stop the payments for the abandoned nuclear reactors, whether it would really bankrupt SCANA. So it'll be, as I said, a very newsy week in nukes.
Newsy weeks and nukes. I think that's going to be like the name of every week going forward.
Yes,
until something happens with this. What are lawmakers going to be doing during these hearings? Obviously, we have committee hearings. That's when lawmakers get their chance to really kind of do their research on big topics, bills. This is their chance to talk to these CEOs about this deal. What are these lawmakers going to be doing, Andy? Are they going to be grilling these CEOs? I mean, what are we going to see coming out of here?
I think they're going to have a lot of questions. And as I said, the main thing is that both the House and the Senate have these bills that would end the Baseload Review Act. And essentially, this is Dominion's one shot at being able to say, let's slow this down a little bit. Let's maybe even stop and consider what we're doing here. The House is scheduled to take up some of these bills this week. I don't know whether they're going to hang on waiting to hear from the CEO or whether they're going to move forward because, of course, it has to pass both chambers. Passing the House doesn't necessarily mean it's going to become a law. It may just mean more of a symbolic thing at first just to say, look, we want to let you know we're going to put your feet to the fire. Really, what can you do? If not, go ahead all the way to where we want you to go, which is to stop the payments for the reactors. What can you do better than what you're offering right now with this $14.6 billion deal?
Some House lawmakers really want to start seeing things move. The Senate is sounding a little bit more of a slower alarm. Are we seeing some sort of maybe some wheeling and dealing going on behind the scenes? Are we seeing some people who really want to hold their feet to the fire, like you said, but then others are saying, let's slow down? And how do you read those tea leaves then?
At the moment, it seems, as I said, the House has been fourth gear the whole time. The Senate, when it came back last week, when the legislature came back, Hugh Leatherman, who's the leader in the Senate, basically said, we're going to be going in first gear. We need to take our time. We need to make sure we're doing the right things here. I think, again, I wouldn't be surprised that you see the bills basically get passed in the House, sent over to the Senate, and then get slow walked.
And kind of going back to the Baseload Review Act, obviously that's the bill that was passed in 2007, I believe.
Correct.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, but like since there wasn't the good faith going forward in a sense during most of the construction with the Bechtel report being kind of hidden, a lot of these details about the construction process not meeting the standards, not meeting the schedules that were laid out, a lot of missing inspections, missing documents. I mean, ORS did not get the full story, you could easily say. So is it really fair to say that, that they should be getting, I don't want to say a bailout, but I mean that they'll get a pass in a sense if they get this deal. And if they don't get the deal, then they say, well, we're going to go bankrupt. I mean, is that fair to kind of hold, I don't want to say everyone hostage, but put them on the spot like that?
Or go bankrupt or at least go to court. I mean, the idea is that the language in the Baseload Review Act really, it makes it hard to get the money back or to stop the money. Unlike a lot of like economic incentive deals where we say, Company X, you're going to build a widget plant here in this county and you're going to have this many jobs. And if you don't, we're going to take back our incentives. There isn't that kind of clawback in the Baseload Review Act. So that's the issue. And essentially, there is, you could sort of argue, as you say, it was a bad faith. But again, if the legislature takes away the Baseload Review Act, I think it's fair to say instantly SCANA will take this to court to say, look, we were promised this money. We were, no matter what happened, and you can't just sit here and renege on this deal. Basically, it's your fault for not putting those clawbacks in. And that, again, goes back to the whole idea that back in 2007, when this law was passed, it was passed in approximately a week. Mm-hmm. So this goes back to the idea that this was something that maybe not every detail was thought through to the nth.
Just kind of wrapping up with SCANA, because I know we want to talk about state of the state, obviously another big item happening this week. But what would be the PR fallout if we have SCANA going to court trying to keep the Baseload Review Act in place? I mean, what would that look like?
Well, I mean, from SCANA's point of view, obviously, public relations be darned, if you know what I mean. They're probably talking about survival at this point, especially if the Dominion deal falls through. And of course, if any other suitor wants to come forward, they're going to probably want to continue to charge for the reactors. So the court may be the only place for them to be able to survive in their minds at the moment. Again, going back to the idea that we may get a report at the end of the week of whether they can survive without the Baseload Review Act. But I think in the end, it may be more of a necessity than a worrying about how it looks, the optics.
So definitely keep up the Post and Courier and all the other news outlets covering this story. This week, again, will be Very, very good one to watch when it comes out with details dealing with these deals and obviously reforms going forward. Switching gears, we're going to talk about the State of the State address, which is Wednesday, and it's at 7 p.m. It's the governor's first State of the State address. We'll obviously be carrying it live on SCE TV and SCE Public Radio, so please tune in then. Andy, you're going to be watching this State of the State address. I don't know how many State of the State addresses you've seen in your time covering politics up here. What do we watch for in these speeches? What comes out of these speeches?
I was trying to do the number. I think this is five or six at this point. Normally, these speeches are, they're policy addresses. These are my priorities as governor. These are the things that I think that are important for the legislature to consider. Sometimes when Governor Haley was giving these, she brought out a new initiative, such as her education initiative a few years back. I'm not really expecting that from Governor McMaster. He actually already unveiled his big plan, which is the tax cut that he did in his budget presentation last week, which will bring, I think at first, the first year is about $150 million in savings if it passes, and then after 5 years, approximately $750 million in savings on personal income tax. Of course, this comes right after the Congress and Donald Trump passing, of course, the tax cuts that we have. Similar tax cuts have not really gone anywhere under Governor Sanford and under Governor Haley. It's not really expected at this point that this is going to go very far, in part because of the topic we talked about earlier, which is the nuclear abandonment and having to deal with the fallout from that. So, I mean, I think partly it may have been a different issue if we didn't have that because, again, because of what happened in Washington, can it trickle down to Columbia?
The governor did have his press conference last week rolling out his budget proposal. And just some things I want to maybe touch on, a little bit of education items that he rolled out. He wants to add $25.2 million to increase the base student cost funding. That's the per pupil amount of money that goes to each student in a sense. That's how they measure education funding in this state, to increase that by $10. This is still underfunded in the state, but it's his way of kind of slowly inching that up more and more. $5 million for a state resource officer in every school in the state. And then also $5 million to lease new school buses. We've talked about school bus issues, obviously, last week. The Senate obviously is taking up those school bus vetoes this week, but the House dealt with it last week. Andy, education, ethics, I mean, any other hot topics that you could see, especially after what we saw from his budget come out in this State of the State address?
He's, the two things that he's hit on, I think, after the taxes is the education. It's been an issue of trying to get more funding per pupil and addressing the issue of helping the poor rural schools get the kind of funding that the schools in the more urban areas tend to get. I don't think that's an issue that's going to get necessarily addressed this session. Now that the Supreme Court has lifted the order against the legislature to have to address this issue, because they have started addressing it, essentially. They said, look, you're making inroads. We don't need to be overseeing you anymore. I get a sense that the next session, which starts the next two-year period, will be the session that they really try to come up with a solution for this. They may throw a little bit of money at it just to say, look, we've done a little something at this point. But I think the bigger plan we're talking about starting next year during that two-year cycle. The other issue that he's actually been talking a little bit about is opioid abuse and trying to help end the epidemic, of course, that is, it's nationwide and, of course, hit South Carolina. And I think there's a number of bills that have been introduced to try to obviously monitor the medicines, to obviously help with, counseling and
treatment
and things, and also to help, of course, law enforcement as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, again, a top of mind issue that I think he's going to be addressing during the State of the State, as well as will be a priority of his moving forward.
All right. So like we said, State of the State is 7 o'clock on Wednesday evening, carried live on SCE TV and South Carolina Public Radio. Andy, you'll be watching it. What else should we be watching for on Wednesday evening?
Well, after Governor McMaster is done, you're going to get the Democratic message, actually the Democratic version of State of the State, from Representative James Smith, who is one of the Democratic candidates for governor. So essentially, again, talking about marrying politics and campaigns, you're going to have that again right after the governor. So we're going to obviously hear the Democratic message, what their priorities are, where they think the state ought to be going, and you're going to be hearing it from a man who very well could be the Democratic nominee for governor. So it'll be interesting to sort of see how they juxtapose against each other and, how much does Representative Smith maybe counter what Governor McMaster is offering, again, as a sort of a preview of what we're going to maybe see come November.
Gotcha. Well, very good. And again, we'll be covering that entire event live and then after the response as well. So a lot going on this week. Nuclear Watch. We got the State of the State. So definitely keep up. Keep up your newspapers. Keep listening to South Carolina Public Radio and SCE TV this week especially. Andy, thank you so much for joining us today.
And again, thanks for having me.
Every week on South Carolina Lead, we keep you informed on political campaign news. So let's hit the old dusty campaign trail right quick for a fundraising update brought to you by Cash Money. Cash Money, you need it to run a political campaign. In the Republican field, Governor Henry McMaster leads his biggest rival, Catherine Templeton, in the fourth quarter fundraising haul, but she remains hot on his trail with money still on hand. Now, it's worth noting that McMaster's $1 million haul comes during a quarter in which he had President Donald Trump in town for an upstate fundraiser. And now the numbers. According to financial disclosures filed with the State Ethics Commission, McMaster's raised $1 million in the fourth quarter and has $2.6 million on hand. Templeton raised just about $720,000, but has $2.3 million on hand as well. So very close right there with that money game. And like we said, money is what you need to really run these campaigns. It's a statewide campaign. It's a big state, and it's not cheap to do this. Now, other rivals in the Republican field would be Lieutenant Governor Kevin Bryant and former Lieutenant Governor Yancey McGill. Now, Bryant raised about $45,800 in the fourth quarter, which is drastically different from those two top contenders there, McMaster and Templeton. McGill raised about half of what Bryant raised, too, so he's about $23,600. So definitely the difference of the top tier and the bottom tier, just looking at fundraising numbers. And there was no update, I should mention, from upstate businessman John Warren, who has put $50,000 of his own money into his campaign as of December 1st. And switching gears to the Democratic field, where there are two known candidates, that's State Rep James Smith, who represents Columbia, and Charleston businessman Phil Noble. Both announced their candidacies in October, so that was obviously in the fourth quarter. And they also raised some substantial sums, nothing to shake a stick at, but it's definitely not what the Republicans are raising. That's because James Smith raised about $548,000 in that fourth quarter, and Phil Noble raised about $101,000 too. So quite a good bit of money there to kind of start their campaigns, but still have a long ways to go to catch up with those Republicans. In our final segment, Did You Know?, we focus on a quirky function of the state, politics, or government that you maybe didn't know. Do you know what a conference committee is? If not, you can thank Schoolhouse Rock for not explaining it. But here we are at the South Carolina Lead, and we want to give you the education you need so you know what's going on up here at the State House. Now, a conference committee is comprised of three Senate lawmakers and three House lawmakers in this committee to hash out the differences between the bill that has been working its way through the House or the Senate and their committees, and they just can't reach an agreement on it. So they get these six lawmakers in a room, and they focus on the details of a bill. Now, you might be wondering why we're talking about this or how this affects you. Well, I'll tell you why. It's because in 2018, the governor and the lieutenant governor are running on the same ticket. And while that might seem pretty cut and dry, it's really not, because that's what this bill right now, they're trying to find out some of the mechanics dealing with what the lieutenant governor does, for example, or how much money the two of them can raise while campaigning this year. While it might seem like some inside baseball up here in the State House, I wanted to pass it along to you so you can be a more informed citizen. The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to keep you informed. Watch my State House video recaps every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, live at 7 p.m. on SCETV's Facebook, YouTube, and my Twitter, at Gavin Jackson. Read the State House Daybook on SCETV.org, and listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and scpublicradio.org. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to sclead@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and The Post and Courier. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with SCETV and South Carolina Public Radio, with special thanks to The Post and Courier. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our production coordinator. Our executive producers are Tom Posey and Russ McKinney. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on January 15th, 2018. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening to the South Carolina Lead.